Hi, my name is Eric Edwards. I played Pearl on the phenomenal movie Blade, and this is the Vampire Movie Minute.
Welcome to the Vampire Movie Minute Podcast, a podcast dedicated to any and all vampire movies not covered by other movie minutes, or maybe other Marvel minutes. There's a Marvel movie podcast out there, but I think they're only covering the MCU. Dave from DC Dave from the Crisis on Infinite Earths podcast is joining me for these minutes of 80 to 85. Say hello to everybody.
Hello, everyone. I am very happy to be here. Looking forward to talking Blade.
Did you see that MCU book that just came out?
No, tell me about this.
I have the audiobook. So FYI, even though they're not sponsoring this show, I don't care. Everyone, go to Audible. If this episode gets posted in time, go to Audible. They're having a huge sale, and like everything is like 85% off. And you can download the audiobook of the MCU history, and there's also a paper, a hardback book out. My local comic book store on Saturday had it, and it was a thick book. It's got the MCU letters in like the place of the Hollywood sign, and that's their cover, which is like, okay, that's fine. You're not going to get licensed for Captain America or Thor or whoever's in the MCU. So I think that's a really cool cover. But there's an audiobook as well, and there's an Audible sale happening right now. And I also downloaded the story of the guy, Scott, who was the Spider-Man for the promotions for Marvel in the 80s, including that famous cover where Peter's got his mask off and someone's taking his photo. And he was the Canon Films Spider-Man for all the promotion for that movie that was never made by Canon Films.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. He did a ton of promo work as Spider-Man. It's his, like, story about being a stuntman in Hollywood and how he got the gig to become Marvel's promotional Spider-Man at signings and conventions and, again, a movie that never got made by Canon Films.
But what a fun gig.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely worth listening to and checking out. It's really cool. And again, his probably most famous thing besides the Canon Films pictures is that photo cover of Amazing Spider-Man. I think it's issue 262. Peter's half in his costume holding his mask and someone's taking a photo of him.
I remember that. I'm almost positive I bought that off the shelf. I mean, I was certainly collecting at that time. I can't remember if I was reading Amazing Spider-Man at that time, but I do remember that cover very well.
Dave, why don't you explain what your podcast is about before we get to Blade?
Absolutely. So my podcast is the Monitor Tapes, a Crisis on Infinite Earths podcast. And with my co-host, Doug Adamson, we look at, in a magazine format, the Crisis on Infinite Earths maxi series from DC Comics from back in 1985. 41 years ago now, and that series, that seminal series, is just so imprinted on me and culturally on so many other comic book readers of my generation and of later generations. It is just held up as the gold standard of comic book maxi series and universe-changing series. And so my friend Doug and I sit down with a guest every month, and we chit-chat about Crisis. It could be something specific, like a particular character or a particular storyline. It could be about the epic itself. People have read, you've been on my show, Chris, where we talked about your monumentous task of reading the entire Crisis and all of the crossovers very recently. And so, you know, it's just kind of two guys and a guest sitting in the back of the comic shop, you know, shooting the breeze and just kind of talking about what their memory is of Crisis.
It's funny you mentioned Crisis. Of course, that's the whole reason you're coming on for, so it's not that funny, but I just had to say that anyway. At the comic book store I was at that had that MCU book, they had a dollar comic book sale going on, and if you bought up to 50 books, it was half off. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I picked up a bunch of like Green Arrow stuff by Brad Meltzer when he was writing Green Arrow. But I also picked up a slightly new, slightly old issue of Batman Superman World's Finest. It's issue number 10. It's the Paul McCartney cover, which has Paul McCartney and Superman singing Wonderful Christmas Time. And in the background, you have a purple suit Catwoman, Batman, Robin, and Batgirl hanging on a trapeze wire. Alfred dancing, Jimmy Olsen looking at the Batmobile with a ribbon on it, the Bat Hound looking up at Crypto flying behind what looks like the pre-crisis, just before pre-crisis, 80s Supergirl wearing the headband and the shield that's part of the cape and everything.
Oh, she's a favorite of mine. In fact,
yeah, that's the one she wore when she was killed, right?
That is. In fact, one of my side collections is collecting artwork of what I call the Crisis characters. And these are the characters that were really kind of featured in the Maxi series, and mm-hmm. Supergirl being one of them in the headband costume. And just this past week, I won an auction for a Fred Hembeck sketch card of her in that costume.
At another comic book store, he just had it lying there. And he's like, yeah, take it. It was just leftover artwork somebody had from a collection I bought. I got an original sketch of Wolverine by artist Sean Chen.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I would definitely absolutely love Sean Chen Iron Man, because that's how I discovered who Sean Chen was. He did the Iron Man book, The Heroes Reborn, Return.
Oh, great series, and great artwork.
Yes, that was the first time I ever really got an Iron Man, was when I read Iron Man during The Heroes Reborn, where Liefeld was doing it with Vilas Pacilio. But I really got an Iron Man when it was Sean Chen and Kurt Busiek.
It's a great team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, speaking of the Marvel Universe, we were talking about Blade minutes 80 to 85, but just before we do that, Dave, how did you get exposed to Blade?
So, it is outside of my wheelhouse, generally speaking, and Chris and I have talked about this off the air before, but for those of you that don't know me, I'm a superhero comics guy, more so DC than Marvel, but Marvel, 80s Marvel, was also my jam. And my thing is, I'm not a horror guy. I'm not a vampire guy. So, you know, stuff like Blade, really kind of outside my wheelhouse. However, I was exposed really to Blade from a cinematic point of view when I watched Deadpool and Wolverine last year and fell in love with the character. Now, granted, it's Wesley Snipes. I love Wesley Snipes. He's been great in everything I've seen him in. I think he's got great comedic chops. Great dramatic actor. He's just fun to watch as an actor. And I enjoyed the story. I don't know if you've told this story, Chris, but I've enjoyed the story of how Ryan Reynolds approached Wesley Snipes to be in Blade. And it's a fantastic story. But the bottom line is he convinced Wesley to do it, wasn't sure if he would do it, and he signed on. And then just performed fantastically in the movie, and I got a lot of great laughs and appreciation for the character of Blade from that movie. So when you said, hey, would you like to talk about Blade? I said, you know, I've never watched the film, but this is a, you know, Marvel movie. It's a Marvel property. I tend to miss some movies anyway, but, you know, let's give this a try. And I did, and without spoiling too much, let me just say, this was fantastic.
Yeah, he was definitely unsure about that cameo in the Deadpool Wolverine movie. I mean, a lot of that stuff had been like just like speculation, and sure enough, you know, it the reveal of Blade. I still think the biggest cameo, of course, is Channing Tatum as Gambit. You know what I mean? He gets that second bite of that apple coming up soon in Avengers Doomsday. He's gonna come back to play Gambit, which is like, wow.
Right?
Someone was paying attention to the fans. I digress. I mentioned this before. My first exposure to Blade was in the comics during the Rise of the Midnight Suns. I kind of a little bit knew who Blade, got to find out who Blade was. But then I really got exposure to Blade on Spider-Man, the animated series, which was a big shock on a Saturday morning. And it was like the episode entitled Blade the Vampire Hunter. And I was like, oh my God, that's so amazing. What an obscure character before I even knew what that word meant or whatever. I knew Blade again only from Ghost Rider. And then when the movie was coming out, I was like, oh, I know everything about this character. Until I saw Deacon Frost, I was like, I thought Deacon Frost was an old man. Wait, I thought Blade's mother like had like a relationship with Deacon Frost. Wait, I thought Whistler was this like clean cut looking guy. He's like this old hippie. I didn't know who Kris Kristofferson was for a long time. So,
well, and that was the so for me, not having seen the movie at all, not being familiar with it at all, it was shocking almost to see Kris Kristofferson in it. I thought, I'm like, wow, okay, that's great. Okay. And now I'm super curious about the cast. I want to do a deep dive into these characters. And of course, you know, they're adapting it from the comics to the big screen. So there's going to be differences, like you just mentioned. But I figure, you know, I always like to see what the inspirational material was, what the original form of the material was. So I, you know, you've opened up a door for me as it pertains to this character.
By the way, are you going to, or have you ever been to Metropolis for their Superman celebration? They're doing a 2-day Superman celebration on Superman Day in honor of course, Supergirl.
I know. I'm so jealous. I can't make it out there. I'm stuck all the way down here in Florida, but they are, I have been a supporter of the Superman. Oh boy. I forget what the name of the podcast is now, of course, but there's a podcast related to Superman, and they've been very instrumental in getting the Superman Society there in Cleveland. Has been very instrumental in getting celebrations going, getting the Superman statue going. And Superman is one of my favorite heroes of all time.
I'm not going to be able to go, but I would love to go to Metropolis someday, just to see the museum, of course. I know one of their guests they just announced is going to be Martha from Superman last year.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very neat. That's very neat.
I know a cosplayer friend of mine is going to be there as Power Girl. You would think she walked literally off the comic strip. She embodies that costume, if you get my drift, completely. So, Bob haircut and Bob haircut in the whole nine, in the whole physique.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. She has multiple white leotards for multiple. She buys them in bulk because once she's through one convention for the weekend wearing that costume, it's time to throw it away because the white does not stay white.
I bet. So, Power Girl's a favorite character of mine, as is Supergirl.
She says it's a lot of powdery under that costume. So because it's white, it she doesn't want it to sweat through whatever. So it's. I've been around her one time. She smelled like baby powder. It's like, why do you smell like baby powder? She's like, it's really hot in here, and your breasts just glisten a lot. having worn a really hot costume, I completely get that. Like, I peeled my Indiana Jones costume off of me after wearing it for 9 hours.
Oh.
It was just like plop on the ground, and it made the sound because it was just covered in sweat. I was just like, I guess it, just like Indiana Jones would do this. So anyway, on to the Blade movie. So I started the commentary for these 5 minutes with the director, Blade himself, Wesley Snipes, talking about notice how he cuts through the vines on the plant. There's nothing holding him back. And that's basically how these 5 minutes begin, with Wesley talking about it. And then it switches over to Deacon Frost talking about how he wanted this, Stephen Dorff saying how he wanted Deacon Frost to not be the brooding, like, I'm tragic vampire. He wanted him to be the conversationalist vampire, because he's talking to Karen. He wants to, like, butter her up and try to charm her and talk to her and have a conversation with her. And that's what he liked about this version of Deacon Frost, really the only version of Deacon Frost.
Yeah, so, I mean, I enjoyed the way this opened up. You know, in fact, it's funny to me how much synchronicity there is in these 5 minutes. It's like it starts with that, you know, with Blade coming out of his meditation and cutting off those roots. And it's really kind of the opening of the third act, I would suppose. And it's just a very well-planned out 5 minutes. There's three basic things that happen in these 5 minutes. But it's very interesting to me that, you know, whether by coincidence or by design, you get these three distinctive parts that just make sense right there. And it's the start of, so maybe I'm just lucky that it's the start of, you know, this action sequence, but it starts with, you know, like you said, the cutting off of the vines. And then you have this discussion with Deacon and Karen. And I really enjoyed how different of a bad guy Deacon is, or as he is presented, especially as something that's a 90s movie, because we're still in the time of, you know, superhero movies as being not superhero movies to a degree, you know? And so you get these cardboard cutouts of characters in this time period, and that's not what Deacon was. He was, I thought he was a very interesting character, and you could definitely see, you know, where he was coming from, his motivation, and I mean, maybe he's chewing up the scenery a little bit, but I really enjoyed how much fun it seemed he was having playing this character.
When Karen notices that Deacon has a scar on him and he was made into a vampire because there's no way he would be able to have a scar on him, I thought that was an interesting detail. And she says, what's going to happen if you turn the whole world into vampires? I guess there was a scene cut out where he was going to show her that they have like fields upon fields of people hooked up to blood. And it was not made. Yeah. Kind of like Daywalkers. Have you ever seen that film?
I've not seen that film.
It's not Daywalkers. What is it called? Daybreakers. Daybreakers.
Daybreakers.
Yeah, yeah. So it's about an entire planet, Earth, that has been turned into vampires. And they come out at night and, you know, their leader of the vampires is Sam Neill. And there's a vampire that breaks out of it. I think it's Ethan Hawke. And he teams up with, like, William Dafoe and a couple other people that are surviving to put an end to the vampires because they believe they have a cure because they're able to cure Ethan Hawke.
Mm. That's a good cast.
Yeah, it's kind of a crap movie, but it's a good cast. Yeah, this is not a great film. I will probably never be covering this on the Vampire Movie Minute podcast.
Well, there is a mention of in Blade where they talk about how, I'm not sure, I think it was Deacon was saying that the True Bloods, right? Are they called True Bloods?
Yeah. The ones that are born, which is so weird that you can give birth to a vampire baby.
Right. So the True Bloods, I think, have a, you know, will feast on other vampires. And I thought that was kind of interesting. But that makes sense if you have two different species, if you will, of vampires. If you have the converted and the True Bloods. So maybe it's not the birth vampires that are getting consumed by the True Bloods, but the converted. But yeah, it was interesting for Karen to point that out, and that was a good notice on her part. I really liked her character, by the way, in the film, because you initially think, oh, you know, typical, she's going to be the female in distress, and she from the get go, she's holding.
The best thing about the movie is that she's not Blade's love interest. They never have sex. The most physical contact is when he bites her in the neck. Then they don't make out afterwards. He doesn't, like, go and bang her at the end of the movie. No, she's not his love interest at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And it's funny because
his love interest is mommy's boy issues.
yeah, that was a little creepy. But it's funny you say that because that's...
Is it after we watch True Blood, all the kind of quote-unquote incest? But yeah, she is his biological mother. It is kind of weird.
that scene that we're talking about between Karen and Deacon, he's suggesting that she's not getting anything from Blade, that she's being left kind of, you know, wanting. And she never gives in to this suggestion that they're a couple or that there's any kind of love interest or anything like that. So it reinforces that. And I was impressed with the strong female lead character like that, that you don't normally get to see.
And true. Blade comes in and just starts shooting up guys. He's got his martial arts fight with these two Asian vamps. Wesley Snipes points out it is actually really cool. And then injects him with his serum. My question is, because there's a scene in the next 5 minutes, we're going to cover this. Did he just use up all his serum, making that vampire's head blow up so quickly?
Good question. You know, I almost wonder if he had a quite a bit of supply of that. But then again, you know, why would he need to go downtown to get more? Pretty consistently. So I'm not sure I have an answer for that one. I can't no prize that one.
Like, how fast does he burn through it? You know what I mean? I'm like, I don't understand, like, what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes. Like, he's out of his serum. He needs it or something. But anyway, I digress.
Well, And it's funny because that scene, you know, it starts. So after we get this Karen and Deacon, you know, Deacon is mobilizing his forces because there's an intruder and he figures out it's Blade. And, you know, he does this line. He says this line about, you know, how difficult can this be? This is just one man on foot. And then in comes Blade crashing in on his motorcycle, which, not that we've seen him on a motorcycle yet in the movie, but who cares? You know, he comes crashing in and it's just fantastic action for the next 5 minutes. It's amazing. I loved it.
And then another part of the commentary is they mentioned that there is some really quick, fast editing that happens. And this is like a big focal point of the movie. Wesley Snipes talks about how the editing in this film really speeds up the pace of the film to make it seem like you've gotten through this film faster than you normally would.
I can believe that. I mean, it starts out, so the movie opens with, you know, 1967 and his birth, and then it flips to, quote-unquote, now. And he's driving through the streets, and you can definitely see them use that technique of speeding up the camera action.
Mm-hmm.
And it does, I mean, I looked at the time on the film and saw that it was a two-hour film, but it kind of flew by. It didn't feel like 2 hours, but it definitely packed a lot in there, and it definitely felt like it was constantly moving.
Indeed, indeed. Well, that's it for these 5 minutes of the Vampire Movie Minute podcast covering Blade, minutes 80 to 85. Where can they find you, Dave?
Well, you can find me at themonitortapes.com. I'm DC Dave Podcast on social media. And I've just launched a brand new podcast as well called The Infinite Earths Guide.com is where you can find it. And it's called Infinite Earths, A Guide to the DC Multiverse, where I take you on a travel log through the DC multiverses.
Awesome. And you can find me here on the Radio Horror Network or on Radio Horror on Sunday nights from 10 to 12. Check out my own vampire story, Vlada, A Dracula Tale. We gender swap the entire cast of Dracula. You can find the graphic novel or a couple of the tie-in books to it. Order them from me or on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or on my Etsy. And we'll be back next week with another 5 minutes of Blade here on the Vampire Movie Minute podcast.